Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, what's going on?
I am recovering from my trip I just got back from.
Your epic journey, your epic quest.
Epic quest to Colorado.
To lands unknown.
Well, not really lands unknown.
Well, unknown to us.
I've been to Colorado before.
Unknown to me.
Yes. I got back from somewhere that you've never been, which was Estes Park, Colorado.
Yeah. Sounds like it was an awesome trip, too.
It was. I almost was eaten by a bear.
Yeah.
Not true, but I was within...
biting distance.
An arm's length. I could have reached out and pet a bear.
Uh-huh. That would not have gone
in
well.
In the wild.
It's good that you didn't.
Yes. Yeah. I was in a hot tub on a deck of our cabin we were renting.
With a bear, and things got a little steamy.
Things got a little steamy, yeah. The bear, he walked out next to me and along the railing. He was on the other side of the railing. And then I screamed like a little schoolgirl. And was like, And my wife just said, use your words. What? Because she's not afraid of things.
No, huh?
And then...
Because she's not a little girl like you.
Correct. And I'm like, bear! And the bear ran away because he was afraid of us.
Mm-hmm. Afraid of you screaming like a little girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
And falling in a hot tub because I kept trying to get up and kept falling. And then we ran inside and then she called me a ninny. Not the bear. My wife called me a ninny.
Yeah, well, it was deserved.
So there was that.
Yeah. And then, right on.
The other epic thing we did was I wanted to... So my mom went with us on the trip. And I went on a ghost hunt at the Stanley Hotel. My wife didn't want to go. So my mom went with me.
Uh-huh.
It was like... At night, it was a ghost hunt, right? Just like you see on like Ghost Hunters.
Yeah.
In the Stanley Hotel, for those of you who don't know, in Estes Park, Colorado, where Stephen King wrote The Shining while staying in the infamous Room 217.
Yeah. And you've told me that you went on this ghost hunt, but I don't know this story.
Right. I purposely did not tell you. You've heard the bear story, but I purposely did not tell you anything about this ghost hunt.
Yeah.
So, listeners, bear with me. This will be a couple minutes, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, starting... We meet these people, and I automatically, like, I'm going into this, like, this is hokey, right?
Yeah.
And then this is the whatever. I'm not going to be the dude who says, like, I don't believe in ghosts, because...
Yeah, no, that guy's a jerk.
That guy is either just a jerk or he dies in the horror movie, right? So I'm not going to be that guy. But, I mean, my mom and I both, we think it's kind of hokey, right?
Yeah.
Whatever. First, it's kind of hokey. We go up into this balcony of this concert hall, because we're primarily in the concert hall of this, because that's the most haunted place in the Stanley Hotel. Exactly. So we're sitting up there, and they're using the normal tricks that ghost hunters use. They like, they have the flash, the mag lights that are barely unhinged, so that if the spirit can get in there and like make them turn on, it can. And, and the flashlights went on and off. And I mean,
yeah.
It's impressive if they're not faking it. Like, but you don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not trying to call out the tour guides. They were awesome, good people. But I mean, you just don't know. And I'm skeptical when it comes to that stuff.
Sure.
Well, while we were doing that. One of the tour guys says, did you guys just hear something? And I did. Like, I definitely heard something in a different area of the concert hall. And the acoustics in there are really good, so it echoes very well. So he goes, I'm going to go check it out. And I thought, he's going to go check it out, come back and tell us this awesome story about what he saw.
Yeah. Right?
So I said, can I go with him? And they said, sure. And so another dude was like, can I come too? So there's three of us, right? Uh-huh. The tour guide and the two of us. And we go into this place called Lucy's Room.
Uh-huh.
And supposedly Lucy is this ghost that lives there, and she shuts the door on you.
Uh-oh.
So we're sitting in this room, and so the first thing happened, we're sitting in this room, and the tour guide's sitting next to me. There's no one near this door, and I can hear the door going, sliding across the carpet.
Wow.
Which is a little creepy, right? But I thought,
uneven
old carpet,
stuff.
Exactly. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. There's lots of reasons why that can happen. Airflow, whatever.
Yeah.
Not that impressed. He's like, and the tour guide's like, well, nothing's really happening down here. He's like, but... There was definitely activity. He's like, do you guys want to stay? And I'm going to go back and rejoin the group because, you know, there was a lot. It was 26 people in the main group.
Oh, wow.
So I said to the guy, if you'll stay, I'll stay.
Yeah.
Sure. So we're sitting there with a little ghost hunting K2 meters like they use on ghost hunters, right?
Yeah.
With nothing happening. And we start to hear this sound. And it almost sounded like music, but then, you know, both of us kind of did our reality check and said, I'm pretty sure that up the back stairwell, we can hear the people on the balcony talking.
Oh, sure.
Again, the acoustics in there are really good. So we agree that's probably what it is. So we get up out of Lucy's room and we go to the stairwell. And we're standing on the bottom of the stairwell, me and this guy. We're the only ones there. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is upstairs, including the other tour guide, which I was able to verify with my mom afterwards because she was still upstairs.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden we hear this noise, this like noise. Uh-huh. And we're like, whoa, what was that? Right? Goosebumps, you know?
Yeah.
So we start to walk around, and I said to him, I bet the tour guide's just down here, right?
Yeah.
He's down around the corner. He's like, dude, it came from that room right there. He's like, there was no one in that room. Because there's only one way in and out of this room.
Uh-huh.
And this guy was looking down the hallway.
Yeah.
So there was no one was in this room unless they were currently in the room. So I walk right in the room. And then the guy says to me, it sounded like plastic. It sounded like plastic rustling. And I was like, you know, it did kind of sound like that. And I'm like, there's no plastic in this room. It's a bunch of metal chairs.
Uh-huh.
And then we look over and there's a bunch of linens wrapped in plastic. So I walk up to the plastic and I kind of tweak it.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's not nearly loud enough. And then I look over and next to that is a huge pile of unwrapped plastic. And I said to the guy, step out in the hall. So he steps out in the hall and I tweak the thing. And that was the sound we heard.
Wow.
So that was creepy, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was no one around. Like, I'm confident there was no one around. Now, could it have been a mouse or something?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I got the goosebumps because I was like, this isn't, we're not being tricked here, right?
Sure.
So
a genuine experience.
Yeah. So then we went through, we did a lot more. Flashlights went on and off. You know, again, I'm not buying that. We went and sat in a room in the Stanley Hotel for a half an hour. That was the most boring half hour of the entire time. Nothing happened. Nothing even fake happened.
Huh.
It was boring. Then it was free time. You had an hour to just ghost hunt on your own small groups. You had to stay in the concert hall. But, I mean, the concert hall is like a basement and upstairs. It's like 15 rooms. I mean, you've got some good...
Okay.
So we went back. I'm with my mom and then this guy and his wife. And I said, hey, do you guys want to go back to that room where we heard the sound, right? I mean, if we're going to try and ghost hunt, let's go into that room, right?
Yeah.
So we go sit in that room. And there's a lady in there who's just one of the people hanging out with us. She's not one of the tour guides. And they have dousing rods, right? Which I believe are total crap.
Oh, that's nonsense. Yeah.
So, but she's supposedly talking to the spirits, right? And she keeps asking it questions, answering yes and no. Its name is Charlie. Whatever, I don't know what's happening. She swears the spirit's been following her for years. And again, I'm not calling the girl a liar because I don't know.
Sure. Okay.
But I'm approaching it as I don't know.
Uh-huh.
So we're sitting in the room and they have this, the tour guides have brought this thing called Ovilus. I guess some dude makes them. They use them on Ghost Adventures. Basically, it's a radio and there's like 2,000 frequencies on the good ones. And this was one of the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
And each frequency is tied to a word in the dictionary, like a 2,000 words, right? So the ghost supposedly can manipulate that sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
That frequency to make the thing speak the word. And it can send you messages that way, right? So...
Because the ghosts, they just know that library. They learned it?
Apparently. I don't know.
Okay.
Again, yes. Skeptical. Right. Me, skeptic.
Yeah.
But this was the freakiest thing that happened all night. All
right.
So we're, it's saying words and like, so two things that happened. This ghost's name is apparently Charlie, right? Now, to be clear, the girl is saying this thing's name is Charlie. It has nothing to do with the tour guides, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another person who's with her is holding this thing. There's no input on it. You can't do anything, right? And she asks, somebody else asks the thing, is your name really Charlie? And the box says out loud, the second she says that, Charles.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, whoa, that's a little creepy.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know me, I just don't believe. Yeah. So I'm like, all right. So I'm trying to think of something and I'm like, hey, I have a t-shirt on, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a t-shirt on. It's got a lot of words on it, right? But I've had a hoodie on. It's been zipped up all night. So no one knows what's on this t-shirt except for myself and my mom, if she remembered, because I laughed about the fact that I was wearing it, right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what it was when I'm done. So while we're sitting there, I said, you know, Charlie, you're doing lots of cool stuff here, and this is really neat. I said, but it would be awesome if you could tell me what are the words on my shirt. I said, there's a lot of words on there. I know they're in the dictionary. Some of them are. They have to be because there's so many.
Yeah.
I said, just hit me with one of those words. Let's see. And I asked, and it didn't really do anything, and I waited a couple more minutes. And I'm like, no, I'm asking again because this is my chance. being a skeptic here with this stuff, that I'm going to... So I ask again, Charlie, blah, 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 blah. I no sooner finish that and it says to me, element. So the shirt I'm wearing is my periodic table of elements.
Oh.
So that creeped me out. Yeah. That creeped me out a lot.
That's cool.
So when I revealed the shirt to everyone, everybody was like, whoa. Yeah. Even the tour guide was like, whoa. So, because the tour guide said he was a skeptic, but
he does
this for a job. Yeah. So anyways, does it make me a true believer in ghosts? Absolutely not.
No.
But some of the stuff felt more than coincidental when it happened.
Uh-huh. Well, that's cool.
So it was fun. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't that expensive. I would highly recommend it to anyone who's ever out there.
Yeah.
They provide you with all the stuff. You don't have to bring anything. Cool. You just got to show up and,
Yeah. Well, the hotel, I mean, I'm sure the hotel makes money off that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
60 bucks a ticket. So, yeah.
So it's in their interest to make it good.
Right. Though, in their defense, and we sat for 30 minutes in a room in the hotel out of our 5-hour thing, 30 minutes with zero happening.
Yeah.
Zero.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, it was...
That's cool.
It was funny. Super glad I did it.
Yeah, that's great.
Just because it was kind of weird, and there was other stuff, but I won't go into it. Those are the big things that happened that made me say, "Wow, that's kind of crazy."
It's very exciting.
So that's what I've got. Yeah,
nice. That sounds like a very fun trip.
It was a good time. It was a good time. Yeah,
I'm jealous. I'm super jealous.
Yeah,
I want to go ghost hunting now.
Yeah, we should find a place around here and do it.
There's a Kalamazoo Ghost Hunting Society.
There is. Because it was, I mean. It was a lot of fun, just because it was, you know, I mean, especially if you go into it skeptically, just because so many of the things, like somebody's like, whoa, what was that sound that just happened? And I was like, that was an iPhone getting an email. Like, I know because I have one.
Yeah.
And then the tour guide was like, yeah, I think that was mine, guys. Don't worry about it. So
that's great.
So, yeah, you know, we should do that sometime, though, because it's pretty...
Every year around Halloween, they do a haunted tour of Kalamazoo, and I did that last year with a buddy.
Yeah.
And it's hosted by some, I don't know, some community group, but a lot of the people in the Ghost Hunting Society will take you. It's a walking tour around downtown, and they tell you stories about all the different old buildings and things downtown. That's interesting.
To tie this into gamer stuff, 2 years ago at Gen Con, my wife went on that tour around Indianapolis.
That's right.
So
that's right. Yeah.
The other thing we should mention is we're drinking Alaskan Amber Beer, an alt-style ale, whatever that means.
Uh-huh.
But it's really good. I brought it back. I had it in Alaska a few years ago when I was there traveling.
Yeah.
And so you can get it in Colorado. So I brought some back for us to try. And
I enjoyed very much.
Yes, good.
The alt-style ale label there really bothers the crap out of me. I don't know what that means.
Listeners, if you know about beer, let us know. I mean, we could research it, but we won't.
Alt style. What? What is that? I don't know. Anyway. Well, that sounds like a much more exciting event weekend. No, it was your whole week.
Yeah, it was a week.
Than I've had. I went to the Hillsdale County Fair yesterday.
Woo!
Uh-huh. I ate some really terrible fair food.
All right.
And walked around, saw a lot of animals, and rode a ride that almost made me puke.
After the terrible fair food?
Both after and before.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we ate and then did some stuff and rode the thing and then ate again after that.
Wow.
Riding that ride made me realize that I haven't been to an amusement park in a really long time. And I've aged quite a number of years since the last time I rode a ride that made my stomach go into my brain. It was upsetting.
Nice.
So.
Old man Rob.
Old man Rob. No kidding. Holy cow. I was excited too. I was like, yeah, all right, let's do this thing. It spins and it flips you around and it's back and forth. And it was a bad idea. Oh, I'm glad I hadn't eaten more bad fair food before that.
That is good.
Yeah.
Awesome. One more thing I want to interject about my trip because I forgot. I want to give a shout out to two of our listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Their Twitter names are Tangerini and Orange Peeler. They've asked us questions on the show before, and they're good pals of the show. They actually live in Denver, Colorado, just in the north suburbs of Denver.
Mm-hmm.
They actually drove up to Estes Park with their kids, and they had dinner with all of us. So at a bar, it was pretty awesome. It was good to meet some people, and
yeah.
So she's got a game she's working on. It was kind of cool to look at the prototype for
Excellent. You know? Yeah. Did she go through POD for that?
No, she went through. She wasn't sure who. She tried to go through POD. She had some issues.
Oh. Okay.
Not indifferent to what we had.
Yeah.
With the file upload, actually, too.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
Yeah. So anyway, she couldn't remember the name of the place, but it was cool.
Right on.
And we didn't get the chance to really delve super into it. I got to look at it. We didn't have time to really play it, but
yeah,
that was fun. And it was nice to meet some other gamers who were friends, who were fans of the show, you know, and it was good times to meet them. So
that's fantastic.
And they're good people. So yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you to them for their hospitality toward you.
Yeah.
And, that's great.
So
we're branching out. We're meeting people. We're making connections.
Meeting people.
Hey man, here we go.
Hey, what you been playing?
What have I been playing? That's a great question. Thank you for that clever transition. I've been playing, I have it here. Have you ever played this?
Bananagrams.
Bananagrams. I've been playing Bananagrams.
I always thought they should make a game called Banana Hammocks.
Well, it comes in like a fabric banana-shaped pouch that you could use as a banana hammock if you want.
It does have a...
Well, you'd have to buy your own.
Yeah.
I don't want you to use mine.
I actually own that game, so...
Yeah, okay.
Or do I? No.
I had never played it before, and then as a joke for my birthday this year, my brother gave it to me as a birthday present.
Uh-huh.
Because he thought it would be funny, and he knows that I like to play games.
Right.
And just...
Thanks for bringing, by the way, the loudest game you possibly
can. I know. I'm realizing that I need to zip back up and put it down. There. So at the, a couple weeks ago, we were just kind of hanging out at home. We were having a game night, you know, drinking some wine, playing some games, and we were a little farther beyond tipsy than we had planned to get, and a little too incapable of handling a full game, you know.
You played Bananagrams.
So we played Bananagrams,
a game that requires spelling.
Like, let's play some Bananagrams. Let's do it, yeah. You know. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
We loved it. Yeah.
It's like speed, for anyone who hasn't played it, it's like speed Scrabble.
But freeform.
Freeform, and you play on your own piece. No one can mess with you.
Yeah.
And so you just got to run out of your pieces first.
And, right, but if you have a letter you can't use, you can put it back in the pile, but you got to take three to replace it. Yeah. And it was fun.
Though strategically, sometimes that's actually super helpful.
Oh, for sure, yeah. You get so many more options, yeah. We played, it played really fast too. I mean, you can play one game in, you know, 5 minutes or 5 or 10 minutes, depending on how quickly you go. I won the first one. She won the next two. We played all three games in like 25, 30 minutes. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I, very much enjoy that game.
Yeah.
We have some friends who are really into Scrabble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a nice way for them to get their scratch their Scrabble itch
without
us having to spend an hour and a half playing Scrabble.
Cause I hate Scrabble.
See, and I'm a big fan of Scrabble, but. Yeah. Scrabble is a game that I can only play once every 6 months or so because, again, it's a long time game where not much is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you better have good conversation when you're playing Scrabble because, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Which is probably why you don't like it because it's a long game where you don't do much.
Yeah, I just am not good. See, to be really good at Scrabble, you need to be good at those little two and three letter words, you know?
And I have most of those memorized.
Yeah, and I don't have any of them memorized. Yeah. So if I'm playing Scrabble with somebody else who's as bad as me, or just, you know, I should say as average as I am, it's just boring.
Right.
But if I'm playing with somebody who's good, I lose in an instant, and it's not even fun.
Right.
So
you're like, I made the word.
Yeah.
You're like, I made the word XI. And I got 47 points for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, and that drives me crazy.
It's kind of awesome.
For them, yeah.
So, I now, there's a group of people that I play with sometimes whenever we are hanging out with them, which is not very often, maybe once, maybe twice a year.
Yeah.
And we purposely, when I play that, I mean, like, I play it, like it's cutthroat. Like, they're out for blood.
Oh, they're serious Scrabble players out
and
there.
And these people are. So, I like to, you know, I've beat them before, and that was like, whoa.
Highlight, yeah.
You know, normally when I get second, I'm like, wow, I got second.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that's about it. I mean, a couple of little things. Oh, I did want to touch on Bandidos one last time, okay? This is the third time, the last time.
All right,
I promise. No. But it's important because first time we talked about it, I said, oh, it's great. Oh, I love it. I played Gen Con. Oh, so much fun, right? Second time I talked about it, I had just played it for the first time since Gen Con, and holy crap, the rules were awful.
You were like, I'm going to set it on fire.
Yeah. because the rules were really written poorly. And I said that on the show, and I didn't do the legwork to actually check the website for updates, which I should have done, and I apologize for that.
Well, you said on the show you were going to do that.
Yeah, and I did. So I just wanted to follow through that. I did check the website. The website had full rules printed that were more complete, and it also had an errata page specifically devoted to a couple printing errors. So the website fully makes good on all those errors. So if you're interested in Bandidos, it's a great game. Get the rules and the errata from the website. You're good to go. It's fun again. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
If you've been following this roller coaster of a story on building the game, Rob's going to spit his beer
it's
out.
It's up, it's down, it's up, it's down. Oh my gosh.
It's good.
Yeah.
So
anyway.
All right. Well, that makes me happy because it really made me sad that you had such a positive experience at Gen Con and then it just went down the tubes. Because that sucks when that
happens.
It was
a real letdown, yeah. So I'm happy to say that it's better. It's fixed now. What have you been playing, sir?
I've been playing Bowling Dice.
A very loud game in a tin.
Yeah, we're into loud games. So Bowling Dice is not a strategy game. It's a game that plays itself, pretty much.
That's all right sometimes.
But you know, it's a game my wife and I found. As you know, I'm into dice.
Yeah.
Love dice.
Right.
This game, basically, they're six-sided dice. They're all custom. They have bowling pins pictured on them. They also have blanks on them,
mm-hmm.
Which means nothing. The bowling pin means you got a pin.
Okay.
They also have a few X's. You are rolling 10 dice, 10 pins, 10 dice.
That makes sense.
There's only a few X's on all those 10, like three chances, I think, to get an X, mm-hmm. and then three chances to get a spare,
mm-hmm.
the slash mark.
Yeah.
You roll the dice. If you get an X in the first roll, you get a strike.
Hey.
If you don't, you get the number of pins you got. Including if you get the spare marker, that counts as the pin. Second time you roll, your second throw, you get an X. This time it just counts as a pin, but if you get a spare marker, hey, you got a spare. Standard bowling scoring.
Uh-huh.
It's fun, right? I mean, it's a simple game to play, but, you know, there's about as much strategy as Wii Bowling. Because as everybody knows, Wii Bowling doesn't have that much strategy.
So you're literally just the rolling dice to see what you get.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
There's no pressure luck mechanic or anything.
Yeah.
So, but it's an ages 6+ game. I mean, it's not supposed to be, players is 1+. You can play it solitaire just to see what your score is. So
just to see how good you are at rolling dice.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, it's not a real highbrow game, you know, but it's a fun time killer.
It's a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're going to play a serious game, sometimes we'll play that first because it's like a 5-10 minute, you know, whoa, we're rolling dice, you know, and it's fun to watch what you're getting, even though you have no control over it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, no, there's those kinds of games are completely valid. I mean, there is definitely a place for those, and sometimes you just kind of want that.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, that's what I've been playing for this week.
Excellent.
And it's a good game. I mean, I think it was probably $5 to $10 tops.
Yeah, that's worth it.
I probably got it at Target.
Yeah. Because
that's, you know,
okay.
they always Target, if you're looking for just small little fun games that aren't super brain heavy, they have a lot of good prepackaged stuff there.
Yeah.
Made by stuff. I think this was made by Fundex.
Fundex.
Yep. Sorry for the noise again.
Okay.
As I pick it up. So
cool.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I guess we should move on from there then, to the mechanic of the week. And it's your turn, sir.
The mechanic of the week.
Can I sample that out and just like play that as a thing every time?
Probably should have done something better than that, because that was kind of weak, no pun intended.
Okay, try it again.
The mechanic of the week.
I like the first one better. Anyway, moving on.
Anyways, you know, I was trying to decide what I had a list of several mechanics, and I was trying to decide, you know, really which one to pick. And I think this week I'm going to go with games. Of course, as usual, I don't have any examples here or any, but cause I like this. It harkens back to player elimination a little bit.
All right.
And has some of that mechanic in it, but it's more than first place, right? I'm talking, of course, about the games where you play your game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a winner. And then everyone keeps playing.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah. So you're trying to get second place mm-hmm. or third place or last place. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about that because I've played that in games before. You know, you find that in a lot of kids stuff, right? Because yeah. like, oh, we want to keep playing. Let's play for seconds. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to think of a way to make that a little more valid. Mm-hmm. Could that be fun? Of course, you run into the player elimination issue, right? Because because if you got the winner, oh, I'm not playing anymore, but hey, you won. Shut up, right? I mean, that's fair to say.
Sure.
So I was trying to think. There are valid reasons, I think, to have that in games. Games where you're playing multiple rounds, mm-hmm. right? Smash Up is a really good thing that uses that, where when you defeat a round or a base, as it is in that game, it's not just one winner. You know, mm-hmm. it's first, second, third.
Sure.
Who gets points for it?
That's true. Yeah.
You know, and so the idea is that multiple people get points, and those points are then applied later in the game.
Uh huh.
As for a game where you're just getting those places at the end of the game, I can't think of a single valid reason to have that other than to make people feel good about not winning.
Like when we were little kids playing games, it wasn't winner and loser. It was first winner, second winner. That's how it was at our house, you know, because, you know, there's no losers when you're playing.
Second winner is the first loser, Rob.
Well, not when you're, you know, three and five
not
years old.
Not in the couch
old.
Household.
Yeah. Well, the game that comes to my mind is Redneck Life, okay?
Yes.
Redneck
good
Life.
Example.
It is a great example of that because it's a roll and move game. You know, you're moving around the track for the whole life cycle of the redneck person that you're playing as,
yep.
right? and so at some point, somebody is going to reach the end first. But the game does not end. Everybody has to get to the end of their life, of their redneck life.
Right.
And only then, after everybody has finished the track on the board with a roll move, then do you do final scores. You count out how much debt you have. You count out how many teeth you have left. And then whoever has the most teeth at the end, based on what happened previously in the game, that's how you determine who the winner is. So whoever gets to the end first is not necessarily the winner.
Right. Just like the game of life, but of course, it's called
Redneck
Life.
Redneck Life, right. So,
I just made that connection, by the way.
Oh, did you? Never thought about that before.
Never occurred to me.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, but that's a good example. And a game we play a lot, honestly, with friends. It's a silly, quirky, fun, dumb game. It's really dumb, but it's still a lot of fun.
And you don't mean dumb in a negative way.
No, it's like intentionally dumb.
Yeah, I mean. It's a very well thought out roll and move game.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
but it's a roll and move game. I mean, mm-hmm. so, and the ladies that sell the game are super nice too.
Right.
We've met the designer more than once.
Yeah, several times.
She's run the game for us more mm-hmm. than once. I think so.
Yeah.
And they keep coming out with more stuff too.
Yeah, they have I think is the newest.
And they also have Trailer Park Wars.
Trailer Park Wars is the sequel to Redneck Life, I believe.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I haven't played either of those.
Thinking that you're collecting pink flamingos, maybe.
That sounds right.
So.
Yeah.
So, okay. There's the thing where, is it really valid that you're getting first, second, third, fourth? I mean, in a game like that, it's comedy, right? It's funny.
Yeah.
That you're getting first, second, third, fourth.
Mm-hmm.
Another example would be that Alcatraz game you played.
That's what I was going to talk about. Right. Yeah.
Because that is not.
Yeah, it's a game. It doesn't have one winner. It has one loser.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's not first, second, third loser. It's winners, loser.
Right.
Winners, loser. Which, that to me is not fun because it's cool to have a winner in the group. It's sad to have a loser in the group.
Yeah.
I can think of other games where, like, you might say, like, oh, I was so close to winning. Mm-hmm. And that would be player elimination games where you're, like, mm-hmm. you're getting eliminated as you go and you're the second to last to be eliminated. That means more than being the first one out.
Mm-hmm. And Risk would be a good example of that.
Yes, Risk would be a good example where getting second felt a lot cooler than getting
fourth or sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying for us to talk about player elimination again.
Yeah.
It's just a little more, a little more tightly knit than I was thinking. I can't think of a valid reason other than funniness to really have a track of... Because when I pitched this, when I kind of brought this mechanic up, my thought process was you've got your winner, and now you're still playing to find out who's
and that's
next.
Different from player elimination. Player elimination, somebody loses early and has to wait.
But that's also different than what you're saying with Redneck Light.
It's true.
Or with the scapegoat game that
Alcatraz.
So let's think of a way. Is there a way to for that mechanic to be a little more valid?
Well, the next thing that comes to mind is some kind of game where you need to survive. You know? If this is a zombie game, for example.
We only got a brief demo of it, mm-hmm. but Van Ryder Games, If I'm Going Down, mm-hmm. AJ, remember we played with him there?
Yeah.
He just kind of showed us the game. Mm-hmm. That's a game like that where you're like last man standing, I believe.
That's true.
Because everyone's going to bite it.
Yeah.
You're trying to be the last one, so.
That still is player elimination, though, more than.
Fair enough. So anyways, so that bad example, but hey, shout out to AJ. Good guy.
If we're trying to say one guy is the winner, but to give the rest of the players a reason to keep on playing. If we're talking survival in some kind of zombie scenario, it could be a thing where everybody might succeed, you know, just because one guy makes it off of the island alive doesn't mean everyone else is screwed. You might have a scenario where everybody's trying to get off the island, let's say.
Okay.
And so you keep on playing until somebody doesn't make it. So somebody dies. I don't know.
I mean, I guess the way that I can think to really validate it, and where I'm sure this is used in several games where you play multiple rounds, right? I mean, that's easy.
Sure.
First, second, third in this round gets this many points, this many points, this many points. Fourth gets nothing, and next round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, like, if you had a game about the Olympics or something, right? It's where you're trying to win points mm-hmm. by winning medals. I could see how that would be, mm-hmm. how first, you know, that would... But again, at the end of the game, I guess what I was really struggling with was trying to find a valid reason why to keep playing after first place is already won. What might be fun is... Well, but see, they didn't really win then. I was going to say, if you make the odds of the game, right? Like, if I win, I'm out, and I've won. But there's still a small chance that second and third and fourth, who are duking it out, could come back and could overtake first place.
What about Clue? What if you make an accusation and you're wrong?
What happens? Are you out of the game?
You're out of the game if you make the... I think... Isn't it? At least that's how we always played it in our house. Maybe that might not be the rules.
I'm pretty certain that's how that works.
Okay, because if in Clue you make an accusation and you're wrong.
Oh, yeah, because you look at the cards.
You look at the cards, right? And so you're out. You're out. So, but everybody else then keeps on playing if you're wrong.
Right.
So
but you just got last.
Yeah. So you think you're first, but all of a sudden you end up getting last.
So that's like Clue. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's not the mechanic.
No, it's not.
I guess I struggle to think of a game where, I mean, I know, and maybe it's just more of a house rule thing. I mean, I remember growing up playing games where that was the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got first. Let's see who got second.
Well, that's what I was just talking about. You made fun of me. First winner, second winner.
Well, because you said winner twice. First place, winner. Second place.
No.
Third place.
First winner and second winner.
You're not a winner if you're not first.
Hey, we were little kids, okay?
Right. So anyways, I think that's kind of where that mechanic comes from. Uh-huh. I just made a note of that mechanic and was interested in kind of rehashing it. I think it's really valid if you're going to do multiple rounds. I would love to hear somebody make an argument for why it's valid otherwise, because mm-hmm. I don't think it is. I mean, unless you're trying to make little kids happy. I get that.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. I mean, when you're playing a game with adults kind of want to win, you know? And you don't want to be number two.
What if you had a game where the second place was the winner?
Second guy out is the winner.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going then. what would that scenario
so
be?
So say there's a maze.
A maze, okay.
Right? Say it's like that movie Cube. That terrible movie Cube, right?
Mm-hmm. Cube was okay. It was all
right. Whatever. So you're in the cube, right? And you're trying to escape, right? It's a survival horror. Because that's just easy.
Sure.
The first guy out is going to get his head cut off. I don't know why. Don't try and rationalize with me.
Okay, it's just going to happen.
That's what's going to happen.
What? I wasn't even giving you a look.
So, first guy out, gone.
Gone.
So you want to be second place. So...
And everybody knows this, that...
Right.
In advance. First guy out is the one who's getting it.
Right. So, I like that idea. Like, that you're vying, like... And you have to make it a system where there's, like, there's actual points or something, right? Mm-hmm. Where whoever does the best is going to win. Okay? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, so you want to try and do second best. That really throws people for a loop, I think, with strategy.
I think I would like that better if, let's say, it's a four-player game and you have four place cards.
Mm-hmm.
Where one card says first, one says second, one says third, one says fourth.
Okay? Right.
And then you shuffle those cards and everybody gets one and they know what that card is, but it's secret from everyone else. Okay? And then everybody's trying to get to the end of the maze. And then if you get out of the maze in the right order, in the order that matches the card that you have, you're going to get bonus points for that. What if you did it that way?
That works too. Yeah.
So you have a secret goal. You might want to be the first one out, or you might want to be the last one out. But if you give away to everybody else what you want, what your goal is, then they're all going to say, no, dude, no. Actually, it might be better if you have like two of each. And so there could be somebody else there who's trying to reach the same goal as you.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because if you have first through fourth, there's fourth guy's like, sweet, no one wants to go out last, so I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to have it be like two people want to be first, two people want to be second.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Or you could even work in like where the cards said first gives you 5 points, third gives you 2 points, right? So you mix it up so they have some options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, if you want to be first out, and so do I, and I get out first, the game is over for you, right? And now the two people with second are duking it mm-hmm. out.
Well, it would have to be in some kind of addition to other scoring that you get.
Well, of course,
I'm thinking, yeah. But so if you hit your goal on that card, you would get the higher point degree, but for every step away from that, you would get a certain number of fewer points, I guess.
Yeah. So if you wanted fourth and you went out first, you'd get 1 point, but if you went out fourth, you'd get 4 points.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That could work really well.
See, so there. We've come there. Up with a
when
way
when somebody's to... out, there's a reason to keep going.
Right.
You have to give them some extra incentive.
Right.
So that could be an interesting thing then for a roll and move game, actually, because then if you're rolling and moving and you have to move the number of spaces that the die gives you, it's going to make you be strategic as to which path you might take on your exit and maybe play other cards and things that change or that modify those moves.
Right.
You know, so that might be a way that to make roll and move legitimate or more legitimate, I should say.
Or... less not legitimate.
Less boring.
Less the game plays you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
That could be worth talking about, looking into.
I'm into it.
Yeah. I like it.
All right.
Good topic, Jason.
Yeah, it was all right. I feel like it kind of snowballed. It got better towards the end, but you know.
Well, that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. We want to get somewhere. We want to progress. We need a narrative arc. In every episode.
No, we don't. Well, that doesn't even make sense.
Why not? We're telling a story to these people here.
You're saying that because you're about to pitch a game that you know you can tie back to something you already talked about.
Yeah.
Well, oh, hey.
Hey.
Practicing the pitch.
Hey, it's my turn. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It is
remember
my turn.
I just said that.
You did.
And then remember I gave you a mechanic, which means it is your turn.
I hate you so much.
I'm not going to let you drink and do this show anymore.
You brought the beer.
I did. Right?
This is your idea.
Shouldn't have.
Practicing the pitch. Well, yeah, you know what? I was all set to pitch a game that I've actually kind of been working on for a few weeks now.
Yeah, we've mentioned that one on other previous shows that you were holding off to pitch it until it was ready. And you thought it was ready.
I was going to go today, but then another one occurred to me just today. I was at work earlier today, and I was just kind of doing my thing. And thinking about what I had done this past weekend, and actually, to be more specific, I was thinking about how unhappy my gastronomical system was
after eating all that god-awful fair food that was so delicious. It was so delicious. I had a Polish sausage with grilled onions and peppers.
Oh, those are the best.
And it was like dripping with grease.
Yeah. I mean, 2 hours later, those aren't the best, but at the time.
Oh, man, it was so good. It was so good. And but I've been paying for it ever since, right? So I thought, what if you had a game about eating fair food?
Okay.
So each player is somebody who's gone to the fair, to the local county fair.
Yes.
And you're not there to see the animals. You're not there to play games. You're not there to ride rides. You are there to eat some freaking garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the concept.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Boop, oh, boop. Chicka.
Wow. Little Axel F action there. This is why people listen to the show, Rob, because of our musical interlude.
Yeah. Well, but I don't think of Axel Foley. I think of Ferris Bueller.
Oh, because that's a different song.
Right.
Bow, bow. You did a really bad job of that. I was thinking of the...
I did a great job.
The, yeah, I was thinking of the Axel F from Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah. That's got a name. What is that?
Axel F.
That's no, it's not. It's there's some other name for it. That's what's called on that soundtrack, but it's got another name for that.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, so a game about eating fair food. So you are a guy who's going to the fair to eat this terrible food, right? And it's a board game, and you're moving your pawn around the board because you're this guy who's walking around the food area, and you have to visit the various food trailers to buy their wares. Okay, and let's say you have five. There are five trailers on the board. Each of these has its own separate deck.
Okay.
And the deck is themed with whatever kind of food they're selling. You know. And each of those decks. Let's say there are 30 cards in each deck. Let's say there's 20 cards in each deck. Okay.
Okay.
And there would be 8 cards that are like their feature food. Okay. And there are 6 cards which are their secondary food. And then what that leaves us 6 cards left, right?
Which could be other things.
Other types of food, right? And that are some of the same kinds of things that might be at other stations, right?
Okay.
And so each of these places has various kinds of food. One that's their most popular food and others that are kind of the uncommon or the rare foods that they might sell, all right? And your character has a set number of move points. So it's not roll and move. You have a set number of move spaces that you can move on each turn. And you're trying to go from trailer to trailer to trailer. And every time you go to this trailer to a trailer, you can draw a card from the top of that deck. All right.
Okay.
So on your turn, you can move, or if you're at a trailer, you can draw a card. So you're buying food from the vendor, or on your turn, you can play a card. And that would be, you play a card and you're going to eat that food.
Okay.
Okay. And you put that into your kind of your ready area, your active area, basically into your stomach. Okay. Other types of cards that you might get, though, there would also be a medical tent, right, where you could get things like antacids.
Okay.
Okay. You know, to try and sell your stomach. As you play this food out here, you're getting fuller and fuller and fuller, and your system is getting slower and slower and slower. So for every time you put another food item in your stomach, your number of spaces you can move is going to go down.
Okay.
So the more you eat, the slower you're going to move, and the longer it's going to take to get to the next food truck or the next food trailer. Okay. But you might also get other kinds of cards that would give you some kind of a bonus. You know, where you might give you an extra move, an extra space on your next move turn, or you might be able to play cards to against somebody else. You might get food coma that you play on somebody else.
Make them go on a ride.
Well, that was the other thing, yeah. So food coma, like, oh, I'm in a food coma. I can't move at all this turn, you know?
Right.
So they're totally frozen. You might play a card. This is, you're going to have to, that tilts a whirl, you know? And then, and the idea is that once you get to a certain point, you have to make a puke roll. And so you're going to roll a die and add some kind of modifier. The modifier is going to be based on how much food you have in your stomach. Also, whether or not you just went on a ride. And so you're gonna have to roll that die, and then you're gonna have to add or subtract your modifier. Because if you haven't eaten anything, you might get a minus to that. This kind of thing, that to be worked out. And then if you don't make your puke roll, you puke up all your food, and all that stuff that you've eaten goes in the discard.
So that game could theoretically go on forever.
Well, the idea is that every time you puke, then it's gonna lower your chances of puking again. Because you're right. Theoretically, that could go on forever. But every time you puke, it's going to be harder to puke the next time. And that's just to put an end on the game. Not because it really makes any sense physiologically.
You could also just say that once you've eaten a food, like, maybe there are so many turns, and then it's gone. Because it moved on, you know what I'm saying?
That could work.
So, like,
it moved on.
Yeah. So you get a food, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say your stomach can hold 4 foods at a time, and that 5th food you eat pushes the first one down, right? Sounds gross, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So now when you go to puke, now there's just those 4 most recent foods. So once you get that food and you've kept it down
mm-hmm.
for those next 4 turns, or the next 4 foods as you eat,
mm-hmm.
boom, that food is safe. But when you puke, all the 4 again are gone. So maybe when you puke, you only have 2 food in your stomach, and you lose those. But those next ones, they get pushed on through.
Well, see, what I was thinking, the end game that I was thinking is that you win the game after you have eaten 2 items from each station and have not puked them up. So that you would have 10 cards lined up there, is what I was thinking.
Right.
But that's not a bad idea, that you're constantly shifting those down, keeping 4 out there or 6
maybe
out there.
Maybe another station could be the porta-potties.
Oh.
If you wanted to make the game gross.
One of the things is I was thinking that one benefit card you might play for yourself is the gaseous expulsion or the breaking wind card. Something would release some pressure, right. You know?
Giant belch.
There you go, right? So, obviously, this is kind of a disgusting but funny game,
right.
Is the idea.
I mean, it sounds super gross, but it does sound like fun.
I think so. I think it could be silly, you know? And it would be really heavy in the take that stuff. Lots of take that mechanics in there,
right.
You know? And there would be cards to play for yourself or against other people in every deck mixed in there.
It'd be funny if you had cards that were like rotten food. So like,
sure.
You go, I'm going to go, like you've been trying to get to this food. You like finally get there and I'm like, hey, and the food's rotten.
Yeah.
Make a puke roll.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's one thing you could do, really. A lot of those take that cards could just force a puke roll. Right?
Exactly, right.
They wouldn't
yeah.
even have to give modifiers, extra modifiers.
Just force you to roll right
force
away.
Force a puke roll.
Yeah, right.
Like, because, you know...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you've got those modifiers already built in with the food,
mm-hmm.
so...
Yeah. And you would need some defensive cards as well, you know? Or maybe your antacids would be your defensive cards. Oh, that nullifies that. Oh, I feel better now. You know? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so you could go to the medical tent, get stuff, and maybe when you went to the medical tent, you're just drawing a card. No one knows what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes maybe it's an antacid card. Other times maybe it's something that's not helpful. Sometimes maybe it's something that would make other people sick.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Yeah. So that's that. Yeah. This is the kind of stuff you would need a limit to the number of cards in your hand. I don't. You know. Again, balancing would determine how many of each, of course. But I think that could be a fun kind of lighthearted, silly kind of gross.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of gross, kind of poor taste, but also still kind of innocent and funny idea for a game. Which, I think that'd be an easy sell, honestly. I'd buy that.
Yeah, I mean, you could make that a very cheap game because it would just be a deck of cards.
Deck of cards, a board, and some pawns to move around, and then a die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a cheap game to make.
I think so. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
And the board could be pretty small, actually.
Oh, sure, yeah. You would need space for some trailers or to put decks of cards on, you know?
Right.
And I don't know if you would have 5 trailers. I'm thinking 5 trailers just for this initial idea. Maybe you get away with 4. Maybe you want 6 or 7. I don't know. I would think fewer, just for simplicity. But yeah. And like I said, each deck would be its own style of artwork on the back of the card, its own style of colored borders and things. Of course, all the food artwork would probably be the same, you know.
Right.
So you could then reuse a lot of the kinds of artwork. So I don't think it would be a real high investment in terms of art.
No.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Real simple, real basic, kind of just fun and light.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go.
I kind of want some fairy food now. I could really go for a funnel cake.
Yeah, I was torn between getting a funnel cake and an elephant ear. I went for the elephant ear.
I would have too, actually,
yeah,
given the option.
But it was like, a lot of places, they just make the elephant ears and they leave them under a heat lamp, you know? But we went with some friends who'd been there before and they knew the right one to go to, the right vendor to go to. And they have the batter stretched out or the dough stretched out ready to go. And you go up there and you tell them how many you want. He puts the fresh dough in the fryer right there while you watch. They pull it out. They wipe some oil on it, cover it in sugar, hand it right to you hot.
Wow.
That's so good.
I'm in. Yeah. Let's go.
Hillsdale County Fair. It's going all this week, man.
See you, viewers. Sorry. Listeners, yeah. Whatever. Listeners, I guess.
Listeners. Yeah.
Thank God this isn't a video podcast.
Right. So there you go. It's a short, simple one, but I think it's got a lot of potential for fun.
Yeah, it sounds like a good time.
Cool.
Gross good time, but a good time.
Yeah. Moving on then. I think we're going to skip plugs this evening here.
Yeah.
Because we have some emails. We actually have quite a few people who've gotten in touch with us.
Yeah, let's start with the comments.
Yeah, please. Why not?
I'll start going through the ones that I've got here. I just want to say thank you, first of all, for making comments.
Because yeah, thank you so much.
We love when we get comments. We've gotten several this week, and hey, we said we'd put them on, and we are going to.
Definitely.
First, I want to give a shout-out to Nate Doherty, I think. He commented a little while back. This is the first time we recorded because I've been out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to give a shout-out to him. He was talking about way back in episode 13, which was four episodes before this one.
Yeah.
Five episodes, actually, this one. We talked about what he calls competitive games, which are competitive games where you have to work as a co-op. And a game he wanted to let us know about is Chrononauts.
Chrononauts.
I've never played it, but I have seen it before. Okay. And I guess the gist of the game is you're trying to recreate history to suit you. But at some point, if there's 13 paradoxes in play, the game ends and the universe collapses and no one wins.
Oh.
So there is a mechanic where you have to work together to make it work.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a great thing. I will definitely check the game out now that I know a little more about it.
Uh-huh.
But he says, you know, it kind of gives you that common enemy element.
Yeah.
And I like that. So
yeah, that sounds great.
I will give that game a try.
Definitely.
Well, we got a nice shout out from Brian Corman, just telling us thanks for talking about him. Dude, we love your game, Jungle Ascent. We will always talk about it.
Yep.
Glad to see it's doing so well.
It's doing great. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thrilled.
They're coming along well on their on their stretch goals.
Yep.
And that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to go with yours next?
Yeah, sure.
I'll switch back.
We had a comment on the website about the tattoo game that we kind of brainstormed together here a few shows ago. This is from Mike. Mike says, at the start of the tattoo pitch, I expected not to like the game, but I think it does have potential. I'm having a hard time imagining what it looks like, mainly how the tattoo cards or chits or whatever will go on the board and work out. So I think it needs some concept art or something. He's absolutely right about that.
Yeah, because Mike, don't feel bad. I even have a hard time understanding that.
And I have a picture in my head.
Exactly. I'm sure you do.
But, you know, I'm sure it will change if I actually draw it out. You know, now, you know, I don't know if that's something I'm going to pursue or not, but like so many of these pitches, you know, we got to start somewhere, right?
But, you know, like Mike said, at the beginning of the pitch, both you and I thought it was just kind of a silly idea, and by the end, it actually felt like a game.
Could go somewhere, yeah. And then he goes on to say, also two ideas, what if instead of a set budget, the guy has a set pain tolerance? That's a funny idea.
That is. Eventually the guy's like, oh, screw that, I can't.
I had enough. Yeah, that could work well. And then the other thing he says is, what if everyone got a character and the backstory was that you're at a tattoo convention and you're all trying to tattoo this one famous celebrity as much as possible before they leave? So make sure you don't run out of money or make sure that you don't spend so much time tattooing that you make a mistake from lack of sleep.
Those are good ideas. I like those.
Yeah, so you're all competing to get this one celebrity done, but if you're getting too aggressive or something, you're going to make them angry and they're going to leave.
And also, I mean, what if you had to tattoo other people too, right? You can't just wait around to tattoo that one celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you've got a mechanic where that celebrity is only there sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. So they're popping in and out.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you're kind of hedging your bets on whether or not, because you need to make money, because maybe at the end of the game, you know, money helps to determine how much, who's going to win, right?
Yeah.
But that celebrity, he pays way more than anyone else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the thought.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to press your luck with, all right, I'm going to tattoo this person. I'm going to commit myself to four turns tattooing this person. Oh, there's the celebrity on turn two.
Yeah.
Somebody else is just sitting there. They're going to grab him and tattoo him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And see, and I was thinking about the game in my mind as kind of focused on the art, you know, focused on featuring, right. Featuring the different artists. In some kind of large format or to be able to look at that potentially in a large format. But that sounds like it might be this idea here of, you know, time management and who am I going to do the tattoo on here. That seems like it might be a more traditional style to the game that might actually be a little more fun. I don't know.
Right.
And not so...
Certainly, I think it'd be a little more marketable.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So, I mean, you could still feature a tattoo artist's work.
Yeah.
I mean, would be really cool to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, alternatively, you could flip it on its head, too, and the players could be people getting tattoos. Yeah. Each player could have their own, like, Stone Age style board. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, in the game Stone Age, to be clear, there's a big board, mm-hmm. and then everyone has their own little board.
Yeah.
Your little board could be your body,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so you could be going to different tattoo artists, and maybe there's a celebrity tattoo artist, you know, because they're a super mm-hmm. famous tattoo artist, right. and maybe you want him to tattoo you. So you could also flip it on its head,
mm-hmm.
and then help to focus it more on the art that way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
just a thought.
Yeah. So thanks, Mike, for those comments.
And Mike is from DiceAreNice.com.
DiceAreNice.com?
Yep.
Oh, great.
Mike also made... I got two comments on my Camp Troublemaker game that I pitched a couple of episodes back. Mm-hmm. I'm still really excited about that. I'm still working on a prototype for that, actually. Mike was one of them. He said he really likes the idea of the game. He felt like there were a lot of different ideas for one game. Mm-hmm. Maybe too many different kind of things going on for that one game. And he agreed that making a prototype would probably help that work.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I mean, that a prototype may teach me that some of the mechanics I've got in there are not useful and, you know, could really work. Mm-hmm. The last comment we had was from Robert, who wanted to let me know that the idea of the camp game really jumped out at him and that he really likes the whimsical theme and there's a lot of material to work with. And he said he hopes I do further development with this one. Good news. That's the plan.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of my next games that I really want to do more development with.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple that I like trying to make prototypes for, and this is one of them.
Yeah.
So there's the comments we've gotten. We want to say thanks for that.
Yeah. And then I have a couple of Twitter questions for us, too.
Oh, let's do it.
These are both from Neil Roberts. He's at Potted Meat on Twitter.
Which, explain that name to us, man. Potted meat, man. Seriously. I do know people that eat potted meat. I work with a girl. She would put it on Lay's potato chips. I didn't understand that.
That is She disgusting. Said
it
was good.
I didn't try. It looked like cat food, dude. I'm just saying.
Well, so he sent us actually a couple questions. So we'll hit his first one here first. He says, can you talk about the design and production of the prototypes you made for Gunslinging Ramblers and Damsels in Distress? The design and production. Well, I think it started basically right here where we're recording this. With a piece of paper and some scratch paper, or a pen and some scratch paper, and just kind of drawing shapes, and then moved on to Photoshop. And Jason, you'd never used Photoshop really much at all.
Nope.
No, and then we sat down for, I don't know, a couple hours, and I gave you a...
crash course in Photoshop.
Right. And you took it from there, and you did really well.
Thank you. I tried.
Yeah. It was, from the design point of view... It was just understanding. I'll talk from my own point of view.
Yeah, of course.
Understanding the information that I wanted to include on those cards, right?
Right.
And they started as handwritten cards, just on cardstock that I cut out by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no pictures. There was no artwork. It was just names and numbers, like point values. You know, that was just that simple. Nothing fancy, because at first I thought that was all that was going to be needed.
Right.
And the game was terrible. Because it was boring. It was without having artwork on there. There was nothing fun about it.
The game's biggest flaw is that it was really, really easy.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, it also revealed that some of the balancing issues that I had.
Right.
But at the same time, it proved that the mechanics were feasible.
Yep.
Yeah, there's sure did. Balancing right. So from there, I went back into Photoshop. I did some hand drawn sketches just to put some kind of artwork onto the card to give it some more character. And then did it again, a new layout in Photoshop with a little more detail on it, a little more consistency than the handwritten stuff. Printed that out just on my home printer at home and learned a lot from that also, and took those lessons and put that into a final, even then not final, but a ready for more professional prototyping thing. It was, again, just Photoshop, just typing it in there, copying, pasting some things, slapping some simple artwork on it. And away you go. I would definitely recommend starting with handwritten cards and keep it simple and low stress, low pressure.
Right.
Yeah.
For mine, I started with I went out and bought a few decks of poker cards, mm-hmm. and then I just pasted stuff over those. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to have the playing card feel.
Yeah.
Because my game had so many cards in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like yours where I think it was easier to get away without doing that. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and then Rob taught me some Photoshop. I talked to an artist who was drawing some stuff for me, and he drew up a couple samples, which yep. I did print on the cards, and then Rob helped me kind of lay out the first card, and from there I took that sample, and then I just laid out all the rest mm-hmm. in Photoshop and sent it to POD and got it printed. Like I said, the best thing that did was that forced me to relook at some rules. I found some bad rules that I made mm-hmm. by getting that nice prototype made. You know, it was nice to, because it felt like I was playing a real game, yet the prototype, you know, it just exposed some flaws and stuff. So.
Yeah, and one thing that you did that I think was a smart idea is that for one of the card backs, you just found a picture online that had the right feeling,
yep.
and you just pasted that on there. And technically that was stealing something online, but you're not going to make any money off that. It's a prototype. You knew it was just temporary artwork.
Right.
It gave you the feeling that you wanted to have for that, and that was a great idea.
Right.
And there's no reason not to do that.
Right. And a lot of people do that, you know. I mean, the first game I ever tried to design years ago, I just took clip art.
Yeah.
For every card, I found a clip art piece that worked, and mm-hmm. I used that, and it worked pretty well, you know.
Sure.
So, so that was kind of the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it's important to say that, I mean, I used Photoshop, and I showed you Photoshop because it's a system thing. It's something I'm already comfortable with. I think there are like shareware and freeware software packages out there that are specifically for designing card layouts.
Oh, awesome.
And I couldn't tell you what the names of any are off the top of my head, but I know I've heard that those things exist.
I'm sure Dr. Google could tell you that.
So. I'm sure, yeah. So don't be afraid. If you don't have Photoshop, well, like we said, your first prototype, you just typed all those things up in Word and pasted them onto playing cards.
Sure did,
right?
Yeah.
There's no reason not to do that.
Right.
Yeah. Don't spend a lot of money and a lot of time for your first version, because that's kind of a waste.
Right.
The next game that I pitched, I've already prototyped, and I just stole some pieces from another board game that we already had, and again, hand-wrote stuff on just index cards.
Right. And something actually I did, speaking of that, I really liked when we played Great Heartland Hauling Company. I really liked the little cubes they had.
Yeah.
So I went online through one of the websites. I think it was MeepleSource that I got it from.
Mm-hmm.
Or Meeple Peoples, one of the two. And I just bought a bunch of those little cubes. I bought four colors, 50 of each color.
Oh, that'll be so useful in the future.
Yeah, and then just some wooden chips. Mm-hmm. And that, I think the whole shebang cost me about $30 with shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've got those forever.
Yeah.
And so those are just going to be my little tokens when I need stuff. And,
that's great.
I thought, why not, you know?
Yeah.
I actually, too, I saw you were using some from another game to make your game that you're going to pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the next game you pitch.
Yeah, for sure.
And I saw how you were using those based on some pictures you sent me, and I thought, gosh, I just really should have some of those. So I now also keep two blank stacks of index cards.
Yeah.
I have a stack of colored, and I have a multicolored, and then I have mm-hmm. a stack of white,
mm-hmm.
Just so that I have those available to me, because I think that really helps.
Yeah, definitely.
So
good to have those just little cheap supplies around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said he had two questions,
He
right?
did, yeah. His second question here, he says, can you talk about some of the game designers you know personally and their projects?
So I don't want to talk about the ones that aren't public right now, obviously,
yeah, right.
because...
That's their thing to...
And I'm not saying that we know like a ton of game designers, a bunch of secret projects.
Right.
But we do know several game designers. You know, and that we've met, and mm-hmm. I do know of some projects they're working on that aren't necessarily they haven't mm-hmm. talked about, or I've seen them talk about coded on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. And
one
we
of
don't,
the ones... Oh,
yeah.
Go
Sorry,
ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just saying that we don't want to give away any details before they're ready for any of that.
Right, yeah. right. Two names we'll link in the show notes,
mm-hmm.
who they talk pretty consistently about the games they're working on,
mm-hmm.
and I like that. One of them is Chevy Dodd.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a really nice guy. I met him at Gen Con. Mm-hmm. He made Scallywags.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to play that.
He's got a print and play.
Oh, does he?
With,
oh, I didn't know that.
With, not for that.
Oh.
That would be tough with the coins and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a print and play called Paper Route.
Paper Route, yeah.
Yeah, he's been talking about that a lot on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, it's common knowledge. I would highly suggest that people check it out on BGG. Follow him on Twitter. I think he's just at Chevy Dodd.
I think so.
So, but we will link him in the show notes. Also Grant Rodiak, mm-hmm. I'm pronouncing that right, who did Farmageddon.
Yeah.
I see he's working on a couple different games. think one of them's called Empire, maybe.
Okay.
And he's Harrow Grant on, I don't know how you exactly pronounce it. It's H-E-R-R-O-H-G-R-A-N-T on Twitter. We'll also link him in the show notes. Those are two guys that they talk back and forth a lot, actually, too. I was actually teasing Chevy about that because, like, they talk back and forth a lot. But they're talking about game design. They're talking about designs they're working on. So if you're looking, if you're interested in people to follow for that, I would suggest them.
Yeah, I agree. And as far as other guys we've talked to, I mean, obviously we've talked to Jason Katarski.
And I know he's got a few more ideas he's working on.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah, and Chris Kirkman from Dice Hate Me. I guess he himself is not specifically so much a developer, but he's a publisher. And
he does have that game he's designing.
I don't know if we can talk about that.
I don't know, because I think he talked about it on our show, but he does tweet about it, and I think he uses the name, but follow Chris Kirkman. You should be following Dice Hate Me. You should be following him, because he's an awesome dude, and he talks a lot about the games that he's worked on, and he's made some, him and his wife and their company have made some awesome games.
We mentioned Jungle Ascent.
Yep.
That's in the Kickstarter right now. We haven't met that gentleman, but we've talked to him on Twitter.
Yep.
And Ben Rossett, who we interviewed while we were at Gen Con, he's got Mars Needs Mechanics. It's still in its Kickstarter right now.
Yep.
It's almost funded. It's that close.
I mean, it's going to get there.
It's going to get there,
It's about a grand away, and he's still got 13 days.
Yeah, if you haven't backed it yet, you should.
Yeah.
It's a fun game. Jason, I know you still haven't had a chance to play it, right?
No, but they just introduced to the Kickstarter-only thing you can get, the card.
Oh yeah,
it's another thing you can use in Kickstarter, and it's actually what is they called there? It's like a part, but it's like the parts you can get. They have a special name for it in the game, but they just introduced the newest one, and it's a Kickstarter,
for
a bike or something.
Yeah,
so yeah,
that's funny.
I thought that was clever.
Yeah.
And that's a Kickstarter only reward, and and you can get that I think at $45 level, so it's not that expensive.
That's great.
And it's a big game. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And Robin, you and your wife loved it.
Yeah, it was super fun.
So those are designers I would definitely encourage you to follow if you're interested in finding out more about games that are being designed.
And these are all board game things. I mean, if we want to think about role-playing games...
there's a lot. If you want to know more about role-playing games, listen to the Genisodes.
Yeah.
Because every week she talks to some new person from who's a role-playing designer, usually. And she's got a great show, and she designed her own story game, Project Ninja Panjitaco, which funded on Kickstarter and is coming out at some point here. Just funded recently on Kickstarter, just before Gen Con.
Just before Gen Con.
So if you're looking for the RPG side, I definitely say also listen to her podcast.
Yeah. She's got all those guys covered.
Yeah, and she's got a lot of history out there. She's done over 100 episodes. She's interviewed a lot of really good people. I know that when I want to know about RPG stuff, I usually listen to her podcast because she talks to so many people. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's...
That wraps us up here.
Yeah. And we will keep, whenever we can, talking about our game designer friends doing stuff. I mean, because, we like giving them the press and we like talking about their stuff.
Right. So. We want to tell you guys about fun games that we're interested in, that we like. Yeah.
Yep.
So. Cool. Thanks everybody for listening to Building the Game. We really appreciate it. Check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. I am @poorly_designed. Jason is @JASlingerland. Go on iTunes, give us 4 stars. 4 or is it 5?
4.
5.
How about 5?
5, thank you. Give us 5 stars.
4 would be good too, though. Thanks.
Well, yeah,
if that's how you feel, that's how you should rate us.
5 is better, though.
If you feel like it's a 3, don't even bother going. It's okay.
Yeah, jerk. No. And as always, send us an email, contact us on Twitter, comment on the show, on the website.
Also, I don't think I've ever remembered to mention this, but like us on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, like us on Facebook.
We've been getting quite a few more likes lately that aren't my relatives, so that's cool. if you're like, oh, I don't want to go to Facebook and try and find it, just go to our website. Right on the side, there's a widget where you can just click like on Facebook, and bam, you're in.
Bance, so, you're in.
Bance! We don't, I can't say at this point we post like a lot of different content there, but it's because there's not a lot of people out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we start getting around 100 or so, and we'll start posting some stuff out there we're not posting in other places and really try and keep the content diverse. So, in fact, I make that claim right now. You get 100 people out there, we're going to do something special.
We get 100 likes?
100 likes, we're going to do something special.
Special on Facebook. Ooh. So,
we got a ways to go, but ooh, see what you can do.
All right, a challenge to the listeners.
Challenge.
Okay.
Hopefully the listeners were like, challenge accepted.
Yes.
All right.
All right, thanks everybody for listening one more time. Have a good night. See you, Jason.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
That's the kind of thing you'd only ever buy from a collector, like one-on-one kind of thing, I bet.
Finding a storage locker.
Hey! Yep!
Oh, gosh. I'm going to punch that guy in the head.